It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
We say things that don't mean anything, but thanks for listening. Yeah.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to We Say Things, episode 225. Suns fan here with Sinner. And how did I do? Was I good? You good?
Good job. I am Robot. I am Sindarin.
Wow, that's spot on. I can't tell a difference.
I'm Danish, like, and I like speaking Danish. How are you, good sir? It's been a while. Good.
Yeah. When was the last episode we did? I think 2.5 weeks ago or something. So it's been a little moment.
But. Yeah, I think this might be our longest break, potentially. Let me just get prepared here real quick.
So while you crack open a cold one, very nice. That would be a sponsorship.
God, yeah.
Where are you right now?
I am in Estonia. Do you want to talk about that now, or you want to do the In Bruges tier first?
Yeah, you know what? Let's do the In Bruges tier first.
Yeah, you're hosting this time, so.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just figured, you know, that everything is a bit different, so people are like, wait, what's going on? But we'll get to that. First, we do the In Bruges tier. So thank you to all our patrons, as usual, and especially the In Bruges tier, which consists of, Dear Mr. Niebling, could you please explain what it physically means when you exchange electrons with their respective orbitals in T? Okay, you might need some more text space for that one. STGC Daniel, humbled bookmaker, recommends Relic Arena. Please do a belch instead of reading this name. Go ahead. Okay.
That's well, a burp.
Close enough. You get a second try. Always get one do-over.
Keep going.
Mr. I Love the NBA segment. I also love Ben Broomhead. Don't we all? Pepperballs. T-Coil. Q-Ludes is ready to praise the podcast. Stupid Copilot. Lab Dota. Yatoro does it again, Cinderin. MagDev and Disco Farm D.
Thank you also to the Mega Pope. Zan Xavier, Nate Thickle01, Hamscroats, Yatoro does it again, Cinderin, Shark TM, Janie, Dop, nothing to see here, Eve Remort, Ben Broomhead loves the NBA segment. Sorry, there's no NBA segment today. What an aftertaste, Anonymous, and algae cover up to 10 to 20% of the Earth's surface, Mr. Niebling. That's kind of crazy. That's a crazy stat.
What do you count as the surface? If it's underwater, it's still the surface, right?
I would assume.
Like the seabed is also surface. That's got to be the case, right? Otherwise, there's no way.
Yeah.
Definitely. Thank you, Niebling. We learn something new every time with you, and we forget it 30 seconds later. But it's a great 30 seconds every week.
Yeah, it makes me really feel like a goldfish. It's great. I guess we can talk where I am right now. So obviously, I was in Dubai for a couple weeks, which we'll talk about that tournament since it's so weird. We haven't done anything for 3 weeks and there's not much to talk about.
There's been nothing happening.
We'll talk about that tournament. I mean, now that we don't have DPC, it's like, it's $1 million tournament. So it actually is kind of a big one, right? Mm-hmm. A really big one. I was in Dubai and then the thing that we're doing was announced, right? I'm pretty sure. Pretty positive.
You mean the one coming up in like less than a week? Yes. Yeah. That was announced a couple weeks ago.
Well, obviously, I couldn't say this before, but you guys probably took the hint that there's another event, aka Dream League, that Sinner and I will be at. And there's a week between them. And it just makes no sense to go back home. I would have been beyond miserable having to do that. So I picked somewhere that's relatively close to Sweden. That isn't Sweden, of course. And I picked Estonia because Sindarin didn't want me to visit him in Denmark, of course.
That's exactly what happened, yes.
Buka lives in, right now he's in Estonia. He's kind of a nomad, but at the current point in time, he's in Estonia. So we've been hanging out, doing normal people things, which is a nice change of pace. And I've been getting a lot of work done. Like when I'm in a hotel room and there's no obligations, like in terms of like doing a tournament, I feel like I really focus in. There's no distractions. It's in Estonia. The weather is atrocious, as it will be in Stockholm. So it's not like I can even go outside anyway. Yeah, it's nice. I enjoy it.
This is going to be pretty unique for you to go to Stockholm this way, right? Because you're not going to be jet lagged and you're going to be used to the cold. So you're actually kind of, you're just switching countries this time instead of...
You think 6 days is going to help me get adjusted to the cold? I don't know.
Well, more than 0 days.
Okay, in the winter, mm-hmm. how many layers do you have in your pants area?
I have underpants on and jeans.
Okay.
So the same as always.
Naked. Because that's what I was basically wearing. And then I had a t-shirt and a jacket, which wasn't really enough. So yesterday I had a t-shirt, hoodie, and jacket.
Yeah, you do three layers on top and two layers on bottom.
I have one of those like Ukrainian Russian hats. I didn't wear that though, but that's just in case I'm really cold. So that's kind of nice to have. But yeah, the weather sucks ass, of course. But what
you're
can
spoiled,
you do?
Shannon. You're used to always having.
It's always sunny.
Basically, what's Arizona. The coldest it gets in Arizona?
Well, it depends. Like Arizona's huge. It's like
okay. Let's say where you live when it's really cold. Is it freezing?
Yeah, it'll freeze.
Okay,
for sure. It's just that it doesn't snow very often, and if it does, it's very brief.
Mm-hmm.
Just because during that time of the year when it's that cold, it doesn't typically rain, right? So
right.
Usually the rain comes in the summer, the monsoon season, as it were. But yeah, so a lot of traveling. Yeah, that's about it. I'll talk more about Dubai when we get to that. But I do have a Suns fan recommend syndrome. Mm. You know how often that I buy games?
I recommend a lot of games, and you never play any of them, so probably not that often.
Right. How do you know that? Have you been snooping on my Steam profile?
No, I just know you as a person. So I have. We've done this for like 4 years, and I've even in the past recommended great games, and then I ask if you played them, and you never do. So
that's correct.
I have watched. I want to say two, but maybe it's only one movie you recommended, and you've played zero of my games. So
I don't know if that's fair. First of all, the movie, I made a big deal about it, and I mentioned it literally every week in front of a live audience, and it took you 2 years to watch it. Okay,
but I start recommending a game every day.
And that's an hour and a half commitment. That's it. A game costs money.
Okay.
And it's a larger time commitment to be able to get into it. Okay?
How about this? I recommend you a game and you have to play it until the refund time limit. And then you decide whether it was good or not.
What is the refund time limit?
It's 2 hours.
2 hours?
Mm-hmm. Oh. You play a game for 2 hours, then you can still refund it.
Okay, very good. All right, anyway, I have a Suns fan recommends. A game that I actually purchased on a whim because I saw somebody playing it on a Twitch stream randomly. It was actually on the front page of Twitch that actually worked.
Oh.
But it's called, the name is terrible because I never remember it. It's one word, Spell Rogue. Okay.
Why is that a bad name?
It's too generic. It's two very generic words slapped together, not memorable at all.
Like Warcraft.
That's different. That's iconic. And
okay.
I'm sure when Warcraft first, I mean, whatever. So anyway, Spell Rogue, if you play Slay the Spire, which I really liked, but I liked it in a very in short doses, I guess. Like, it wasn't like Hades, I played the shit out of, and then I beat it, and then I played a little bit longer with Heat, and that was about it. Slay the Spire, I feel like I unlocked all four characters, and a couple of them just were not interesting at all. And the replay value, I know the replay value for a lot of people is really good. For me, it wasn't, for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't find the interest in continuing, but the game was really good. So Spell Rogue, I was saying it's not a very popular game right now, which is surprising. It's like it takes think of Slay the Spire, pretty much a carbon copy. Like you have these three levels that you go through, literally exactly the same. The graphics are like the style, just depending on what you guys like, but it's more 3D oriented. The graphics are just better, more like Dota, I guess. And the big difference is when you're making your decks, the spells are, or sorry, the cards are just spells that you inherently have. So you can have up to six spells, essentially.
Okay.
And you can swap them out at any time, like after a battle. And you throw dice. So when you throw dice, you can manipulate them with some of your spells. And you can do damage with them, you can gain armor, so a lot of the stuff is the same as what would happen in Slay the Spire, but kind of a cool twist with the dice, because there's just a tons of ways to manipulate it. Like sometimes, like just being able to have an even number will allow you to activate a spell, and you can activate the spell several times during the course of a battle. So there's a lot of strategy to it. I find it really engaging. I think the one thing that I would say kind of sucks compared to Slay the Spire and is like the story, I guess. Like Slay the Spire, it's ironic to say, because Slay the Spire, I feel like, is
very minimal story.
Exactly. It's minimal, but it's like this, it has like a setting. You can just feel the theme, you mm-hmm. know? Like even when you go in these, like what are those things that you, like the question marks, is it? You land on, and it has like a little story, like whatever. You don't read them half the time, but it's something about it just makes it feel cool.
Complete, right?
Yes. And for this game, there's like basically none of that, but it is early access, so that could be fixed in the future. So you're not going to get that same feeling, but I think the gameplay is pretty freaking cool. Right now, there's three characters. I've only unlocked two. But yeah, I'd recommend it for people that like Slay the Spire. It's definitely an interesting take. They definitely copy a lot from Slay the Spire, but I don't see that as a bad thing necessarily.
It's single player only then.
Yeah.
And how much is it on Steam?
Was it $15 maybe?
That's about the same as Slay the Spire. I think Slay the Spire is a bit more than that. I think it's like 20 or something.
Mm.
Okay, cool. Shannon recommended a game, everyone. There it is.
Yep, until next 2 years from
now. I will recommend a movie next episode. Yeah, that was a good one. That was a good one. Oh my god, I can't. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. Okay, you've been in Dubai for BetBoom Tourney, BetBoom Dacha.
That's right.
I watched quite a lot of this tournament, so I'm pretty much up to date with how it went and which teams did well. Sorry?
At that tournament. Who's your favorite caster?
Probably Lacoste.
I thought you were going to say the Russian stream is what you...
Oh. Yeah, I really liked that one. That was mainly what I watched. Lacoste was featured on that one time, and that was my favorite cast.
That's good. Very good.
Yeah, so why don't you bring us up to speed with what your experience was with like the tournament itself and the surrounding experience you had being there?
Oh, you want to do that first and then the tournament after?
Whatever, it's your tournament. I wasn't there, so you just...
Yeah, you said you watched a ton of it, so you probably watched more than me, honestly. I feel like I wasn't even working.
I watched a decent amount of the games. I probably watched as many as you did, if you only watched the ones you cast, but I'm assuming you watched a bit more on the side, right? But
I basically just watched the ones that I cast.
Okay.
Don't tell anybody.
I found the vibe... Okay, I'll just give my take quickly. I found the vibe very unique... It seemed like very playful on the stage with Jenkins and with Nat. Like, it was almost like skit-like to an extent. Like, it was almost fourth wall breaking. Like, we are not really going to fully commit to this. You know what I mean? Like, they were just kind of fucking around a little bit, and that was the vibe. I don't know if that was by design, or if it was just because, okay, the English production is pretty minimal compared to the Russian one, or what the idea was there. But they were very much just winging it, it felt like, a lot of the time.
Yeah, so we got there, and it didn't really trigger inside me until I got there that these like Russian/Ukrainian tournaments that I've been to, like the organizers, they love themes. Like, can you think of anybody other than Moonduck that has done like a theme? People get dressed up. Like, even in Moonduck, we didn't get dressed up, though, right? Like, WePlay did a lot of that.
Yeah, WePlay, yeah.
And now Fissure.
I guess Beyond the Summit did it once, maybe? But, yeah, I guess that's...
Beyond the Summit? For what tournament?
But when you say theme, does it mean that, like, the whole set and people are dressed, like, this entirety is in that kind of setting?
Yeah, more so the attire, that you're, like, you're literally dressed up for the theme.
But maybe not then, actually. Yeah, you're probably right.
But anyway, they gave us this very loose theme of Stranger Things. Like, there's a vortex or rift or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's very loose. And it's hard for me to tell because I didn't watch any of the Russian stream, but I think they took things more seriously on the Russian stream, and we kind of just fucked around and made it funny. So yeah, there wasn't any really strict, it's not like there was a script or anything. But yeah, I enjoy that kind of stuff other than the clothes. It wasn't a, they didn't wash the clothes very often. So after day two, it started, I would like, everybody was smelling awful. I'm like, okay, I'm wearing a t-shirt until you guys can wash this. So that happened once more. So basically half the event, I was just in a t-shirt. But yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead with what? You're the one telling the story.
No, go ahead. That's the story. There was a theme, and I kind of, I dig that kind of stuff.
So the theme was, there is a rift, and it's Stranger Things, and you were like, what would I wear in the 80s? And you were like, I would wear the exact same thing in the 80s.
Well, everybody had different categories, I guess, that they were assigned in terms of like what characters they were. So like Nat and Jenkins as they weren't the host. I was the host along with B-Cop for the English team. They were like stage hosts, and their theme was reporters. Man, I'm not going to lie. They told us the story and a lot of it went out both ears. And we just kind of made our own lore. So I don't even know what is the stuff that we created versus what they actually told us at the beginning. But for us, like me, Kazu, Lacoste, B-Cop, we were supposed to be very arrogant students that were having like a private broadcast to... Oh God, what was the story? It was a weird one.
It really came across on the broadcast, I will say that. I got it the whole time. Yeah, yeah. It was a good story.
They would give us the clothes that an arrogant, like, top 1% wealth of student would wear. And they just give me some random long-sleeved shirt. I'm like, this isn't really what they would wear, but whatever. It is what it is. But yeah, it was fun to just fuck around, you know? Okay.
So... You split the days in half, right? It was you and Kezu, and then it was Lacoste B-Cup casting every game, right? The whole way?
Well, there was a third screen during the groups that was just remote that Ricky or Cryptic was casting.
Yeah. What was your... like I said, I was watching a decent amount of the games. What was the biggest surprise or what was the best game you cast? Just some more tournament stuff.
Honestly, if I can be... totally upfront, I thought the game quality was pretty bad. I think the patch is kind of boring.
Okay.
I don't know how you feel. There was game two of the Falcons finals against Liquid that they forgot the refresher shard in the pit, and that's the most fun I had of casting, probably.
Because you got to scream, and you love screaming.
There weren't really that many. Like, there were a ton of stun. Like, this was the main issue with this patch so far. Is sometimes the team, and I know this has happened in other patches, but it feels like it has happened more consistently, where somebody just wins the laning stage. The game's over at 5 minutes. It literally feels like that, but it takes 40 minutes to end. Mm-hmm. Like, casting a game like that, this is the first time it was a Falcons game, I remember. They were very Tundra-like. Everything's super methodical. They won the laning stage hard, and they're just taking things so slow. I was so bored out of my mind. I literally said that over and over during the game. This is the worst game of Dota that I have ever cast.
I watched you were livid at the post game. Next game can only be better than this because this is the worst game I've ever cast.
Like, legitimate. Like, as a viewer, what did you think? Because, as you know, when we cast together, even when the game is really boring, we try to like make it more interesting. Like, obviously we can have our conversations, but I have never been that mind-numbingly fucking bored during a game. Holy shit. It was bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very difficult to design Dota around that, to be honest. I think it's just naturally going to happen in some games. The problem is if it happens in half the games, right? If it happens sometimes, it's okay. You know, like, one team gets ahead, maybe it's difficult to end, but you need to win more before you can end. Maybe this patch has a little bit more of it than the previous one did. I think I could see that. It's not particularly entertaining that one team is ahead by 20k and then they're ahead by 25k and 30 and 35 and nothing's happening, you know. It's like, okay, you know, but they're playing to win. I don't blame them in the slightest.
It's not the team's fault. Yeah. I think going high ground is just too hard. If you can be up that much that early, you should be able to finish the game in 15 minutes. Like, in theory, that's how it should be designed, but it's really hard to make it so it's not too snowbally as well. So
yeah. Imagine if you could win really fast, how like Chen would just be even more broken.
I mean, TI4, right? Yeah. TI4 was, or the tail end of it was basically that.
Right? Yeah. So it's very difficult. I think it's one of those things where people will always complain about any given patch that this or that hero is broken or this or that playstyle is too strong or whatnot. But you really need to appreciate when you have a quote unquote balanced patch, because it's honestly, even if you're like really, really good at game design, I think Dota is just too complicated that you can't predict when you're making changes whether it's going to be balanced or not. And you need to make the changes significant enough that people are excited to play, right? So you want to shake things up, new items, new heroes, new balancing, all this stuff. And there's always going to be 10 interactions you didn't think of. There's going to be bugs. There's going to be blah, blah. It's a mess.
I agree, but I do think that they could probably patch the game a little bit more often.
I'd agree with that.
Like with these B, C, and D patches, like they're good for the game, obviously. Mm-hmm. But how often do they have something that changes like armor to towers being lower, for example? Like anything that's not to do with items and heroes.
Right.
I feel like they could stray away a bit and just make high ground a little bit easier for the time being, because it's not like this is new. This has been a thing for like a couple months now, you know?
Right.
So, but yeah, it is unbelievably hard to balance this game. So
the thing that's a concern, I think, for the devs is that if you make the base easier to push, we need to remember that our perspective is essentially, for the most part, pro Dota and high level games compared to the average player. And in patches where going high ground is easy, there's way fewer comebacks and people give up easier. So the game quality, a lot of the time, can be tied to how easy it is to end. Or if games are easy to end, people are just more likely to forfeit, and that's not interesting, right? So I think one of the things that was celebrated when High Ground got harder was that a lot of people were reporting, oh man, I'm making epic comebacks that I didn't used to make. Oh, we're playing 60-minute games, they're long, but at least we feel like we can win. And like, how do you balance this game for 2K MMR and 12K at the same time? I genuinely think that is impossible. So you need to find this healthy medium where there's going to be some give and take here and there. That's also why some heroes that are never played in pro still get nerfed, because, you know, in low level pub games, they might be too good. You know, there's some heroes that I would love to see that just aren't good enough at a pro level. But if you buff them a lot, they're going to have 60% win rate in Herald. And then it's like, okay. So, you know, it's difficult.
Okay, we can talk a bit about the tournament itself, the standings and whatnot, and then I can talk about Dubai, I suppose. So, group stage, Aurora and VP were eliminated in group A. Nouns and OG eliminated in group B.
Wait, now, we didn't do a prediction for this one, did we?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I don't think so.
Yeah, we did
not. Let's try to do one for Dream League then.
Sure.
After this.
As in this episode, we can do that.
Yep.
So OG was very surprising because they came in. I remember predicting them to win a lot more games because they crushed the qualifiers. But they got destroyed, and we'll talk about their change after this. Now it's not that big of a surprise. Anything surprising in the group stage standings?
Not really. I feel like Aurora hasn't been doing too hot lately. I think VP is one of those teams that can get, especially through the groups, but can even get like top six, top four, but their group is just fucking stacked. Like, look at that group. LGD, Liquid, Gaming Gladiators, Falcons, and Aurora, right? It's just, it's always going to be hard. It's funny that that group was a four-way tie for first, by the way. Four teams got six and four in that one, so that just goes to show how tight it was, right? And Aurora and VP, despite not making it, it wasn't like they got crushed. They went 3-7, which, you know, isn't great, but it's not like 0-10 or 1-9. They won games off these strong teams, but just not enough. Nouns and OG getting knocked out. Their group was BetBoom, Azure, Spirit, and Extreme. Honestly, also not surprising. I think I would have picked those two teams to get bottom there, even with OG doing well in the quals. It's just the quality of teams in these groups was extremely high. So, yeah, probably the teams I would have picked to lose lost. Not surprising, really.
Yeah, and I think the entire tournament, when I predicted BetBoom to win, they would lose, and vice versa. They are the most up-and-down team. I think we cast two games in a row where they were up 5K in the laning stage, which for literally every other team throughout the entire tournament means a win. And for them, they threw both times in very embarrassing fashion, and I lost faith horribly. And then right after that, they won like every game. until
you believed, and then they lost again.
Just, yeah, and then I started believing, and then they lost horribly. So, I don't know. It seems weird.
Do you sometimes feel like you have powers?
Of course.
You know, like, it's funny, isn't it? So, yeah, we get to the finals part. Let's just go over top four. Were the games close? Do you feel like it was not the right team that won? Because I always feel like that's kind of stupid. Did it feel like this was how it was going to pan out when you reached top four, that this was going to be the placements? Or?
Yeah, it wasn't that big of a surprise. I mean, Azure Ray was a wild card for me because I hadn't seen them that much up until the tournament start, but they looked pretty good. A bit shaky at times. I think Extreme Gaming going out earlier was surprising because they crushed the group stage. Then they go out 2-0 to Falcons and then 2-0 to Liquid right away. They just dropped out immediately.
I mean, those were two pretty tough draws, right?
Yeah,
those two teams got first and second. So
yeah, but yeah, it did feel like Falcons were on another level for sure. I mean, when it came to the grand finals versus Liquid, I think game two was the one that Liquid could have won. The other two weren't remotely close. Mm-hmm. So I think
game three for me was a big outdraft.
Was it?
It was funny. It was funny listening to you two on the panel. You and Kezer were talking about this Huskar pick and how no other team would pick it here, and that it was a specialist thing. To me, I looked at the draft and I was just like, "This is a fucking awesome Huskar game." So I just had a different vibe with that. I was like, "It's Falcons." Yeah, wasn't that the last game? Didn't they Huskar them in game three? Am I mixing this up with another game?
You're mixing it up.
Oh, wait,
Huskar was game three of upper bracket between BetBoom Falcons.
Yes, that's right. It was the, yeah, that, sorry, my bad. Yep, that one. Never mind. That's a different story then. Okay. But yeah, the part of the finals I saw is pretty much the same vibe. Like, Falcons were just, they're just better. I mainly watched game three, and like, Liquid had one good fight that maybe could have given them a shot, but they just got crushed way too hard early in the game. Like, they were very far behind minute 10, like you said, and Falcons just, they don't lose those games. So I think in the history of the game, I think the team with the highest win rate with an early lead, and this is just purely anecdotal, I just feel like Tundra never lost games when they were ahead in the lanes, and Falcons is continuing the carrying on the torch with some of the same players and the same coach. I think this is something AUI is very adamant about in the way he coaches teams. I think he's very focused on the small things and on keeping on just building. He's very nerdy in his approach to the game, which I think is very good in this aspect. So I think they're drilling the laning stage, they're drilling the little things, and then they're just building on top of it, like building blocks and just making sure to... Maintaining the lead is like the biggest skill you can have in Dota, because you're going to get the lead in a lot of games when you're this good. And if you can keep it the whole way, then it's just a free win every time, right? So,
yep. It takes the methodical nature of Tundra, but then adds a little spice with Malrine and Amar.
Yeah.
They're always fun good characters.
BetBoom got third. Do you feel like that was a good result for them?
I mean, yeah, considering how many times they threw in embarrassing fashion. Yeah, I think so.
They got 2-1'd in the upper final and 2-1'd in the lower final. So they were one game off twice of getting to the final. So very close, but not quite. So yeah, that's the top four. Falcons 1, Liquid 2nd, BetBoom 3rd, and Azure Ray 4th. And we, with no information we have whatsoever from Valve, we're going to assume that this is one of the events that will be considered for TI invitations. So obviously for those four teams, this is very good, in particular for Falcons, but also for Liquid, who... If you keep getting second places in everything, you're obviously going to get invited, right? And they're continuing that streak. They're probably, as usual, sad they don't win the tournament, but the silver lining here is that getting second here is really fucking good, because these teams were... The average quality of team participating in this tournament was very high. So,
yep. And I'm happy for Crit to be back in his winning ways after being stuck in NA for how many years now? So
I think his last LAN win was 2019 or 2018.
Was it? I thought it would be with OG. Isn't that too late for OG?
No, because I think he won one LAN after that.
Really?
I'm forgetting which one it is. Yeah, I think it was 2019. I saw someone checked it. It was 2018 or 2019.
I can check. Manila Masters. How big? That's a tier one tournament.
Yeah, he won that with EG, I think.
2017. Yeah.
2017?
Yeah.
Really? Okay. Holy shit. Okay. I thought that was later. Well,
I didn't realize EG won anything. That's shocked. I don't remember that.
I mean, it's 6.5 years ago, right? You're gonna. There are so many tournaments; it drowns it out eventually. So, okay, cool. Tell me a bit more. That was a 1v1 tournament, which is very unique. How's that like? Were you casting any of that?
No, I didn't cast any of it. Okay. So I just had the whole day off.
So that was the cost in B Cup casting every game, or?
Yeah, and I didn't cast any. I mean, I didn't watch any of it either because I find 1v1s, I don't know how you feel. Maybe we've had this discussion. I find them unbelievably boring because for some reason, and maybe you know the answer to this, who created this trend of you need two kills or the tower? It should be fucking first blood. That's it. That makes it so much more exciting. Like, why elongate this?
I mean, in reality, how often do you lose after first blood?
Well, exactly. But then it's
kind of point.
Right?
Yeah. It's kind of like Dota in general, where it's like, yeah, where you have a chance of coming back as the team that lost all three lanes and are down 10k at minute 15, but really it happens 2% of the time.
Is this something that Valve did a long time ago that people are just copying? Because
I don't know if it was their rules. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I agree. I think first blood, first tower, or 15-minute CS is fine. I don't think the second kill is necessary either. I didn't watch much of the 1v1s. I would imagine that nobody lost after getting first blood. That would just be my guess. Like, at this level, that's just very unlikely to happen. Because even if...
I think it may have happened once.
Let's say you trade and you kill someone and you're mega low. You used all your resources on killing them and then you suicide to the tower. You're still way ahead, right? Like, the worst thing that can happen is that you kill your opponent and you stay in lane with nothing. And then they come back, kill you, and then win. So that's just like the one thing you can't do. If you don't do that, I think getting first blood should be a win 9 out of 10 times, probably.
I like the pick ban situation. I thought was kind of cool. I heard there was an unbelievably boring matchup, which was Hoodwink versus Hoodwink, which nobody ever got a kill in. It was just 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I think definite room for improvement. It's cool that there's $100,000 on the line for a 1v1. The idea is amazing. It's just you got to have better rules. I don't know who they're copying, but those were awful.
I guess now that we mentioned that tournament, let's go over who won prizes, because this was a 40-player tournament. I'll go over the biggest stories for me. Story number one, Blitz got top 16, which I think is hilarious. The coach of Liquid, who I don't know what MMR he has and how much Dota he even plays compared to these pros, so that was funny. Quinn got last. That was also fun. And then the top 8 in order, so 5th through 8th got the same prize, which was Ori, Squadix, Setsu, and Save. So Save, the standout there, being at position 4. He got top 8. 3rd, 4th was GPK and Boxy, who is position 4 for Liquid. So position 4 getting 3rd, 4th, to me, is awesome. The guy's very good at the game. He almost made the finals, actually. Lost out to XM, I believe. And then the finals, Nisha versus XM. Nisha came up as the winner there. So Liquid got a first place on one player in this tournament. And that's something to be proud of. I think winning a tournament of this kind is extremely difficult. The level of play there is huge. And I don't know how this worked with the signups, like that there could be, if it was anybody who wants to join can, the OG's manager Bonkers also played. He's like, I think he's 2.5 or 3k or something. He also played the tournament.
Cheated.
I think he lost.
Yeah, he was telling us that he was going to pick Chen, go into the jungle, which is against the rules, and immediately get disqualified. I don't know what would happen.
That's probably less embarrassing than playing the lane for him. So that was that. Lots of really good players in this tournament. And just to mention some of the people that did not place in the prizes, not to highlight them or make them look bad, it's to make the winners look good. A lot of the players that didn't place in the prizes would be Stormstormer, Shiro, Malreen. You had Gunner, you had XXS, Amar didn't place, Armel didn't place, Laurel didn't place, Laurel got last, together with Quinn, 33 didn't place, Mika didn't place, and obviously there's a lot of other really high-skill players that didn't place.
But those FY, Toronto, Tokyo, yeah, a lot of big names.
Yeah, just a lot of those aren't necessarily mid players, right? I was mainly highlighting the core players or the ones that have Tokyo played the role, but Toronto, Tokyo could have, you're right, he could have definitely done well. But yeah, It's cool. I think this is a really, really good flavor to have on a tournament, and I hope Valve does it for TI again. They had 1 year with a 1v1 tournament. I remember both the fans and the pros watching it on the pros were watching it on the screens and getting pretty hyped over it, cheering for their teammates and shit. I just think it's a really good vibe. So like you said, if you have good rules and the implementation is right. I think the biggest problem at TI was scheduling with, you wanted to give the players the same amount of rest and the same amount of prep time. But then if your player's in the 1v1 tournament, you're taking time away. But come on, if we have a 5-day break, can't we have a 1v1 tournament during that one? You know, I think that would be a great way to keep the hype for the tournament and the event going into the final stage. And then if some teams and players go home and therefore don't participate, then that's what that is.
Yeah, you could make it, like, imagine if Slacks was the one organizing that. Mm-hmm. You'd make it like a WWE type thing.
Yeah.
Where, like, you can make it so exciting. And then obviously, like you said, the rules need to change to be first blood. But it would be hype for sure.
And if you made it opt-in, so anyone could play, including supports and offlaners and whatnot, then maybe some of the knocked out teams would still, get some more screen time with some of their players. And if they're sticking around anyway, doing nothing, that way they can still be activated. And arguably, you could even say that the players that are knocked out have more to play for because they don't have this other thing that they need to prepare for at the same time. So they can just give it their all, right? I don't know. Yeah. I think it could be fun.
Agreed.
And I think this prize is fine. I think, especially with where TI was at last year with the prize pool, maybe you can make it $250,000 or something for this. And I personally wouldn't even mind if you took it out of the main tournament prize pool, to be honest, to make something like this. As long as the thing you could argue is that it's unfair because mid players have an advantage. But as we saw in this event, the skill level of these players across the board is so high that non-core players can get top four. And Boxy could have even made the finals, right? So if you're good enough, and if you know it's coming up for TI, you can start practicing for it if you think it's fun. And it's obviously still not the primary tournament. So anyway, that would be cool.
Totally agree.
Okay. Any last comments on Shawarma?
Yeah, Dubai. I mean, the sad thing is, like, obviously the players are all busy, like, playing and strategizing. And then it's mostly just, like, Russian talent and whatever. So it's just six of us. And Lacoste and B-Cop on total opposite schedules. So it's just me, Kezu, his girlfriend, as you know. And then Jenkins and Nat are just working the working the whole day. Mm. So I have a lot of time off. I spent a lot in my hotel room, honestly. I didn't get to see very much, which is pretty sad. I think I missed out on an opportunity to see the Dubai Mall. Have you heard of this thing?
It's like enormous, right? I think I've heard of this.
Yeah, it. So I didn't know it was connected, but I heard that there was like a, I thought it was a hotel that had the, like a ski resort kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, what the f-? Apparently that's in the mall. So the mall is the biggest mall in the entire world. And it apparently is just fucking absurd. Sadly, didn't go get to see that. Okay. But just walking around from hotel to hotel, they put us in ridiculous, like, 5-star or 6-star, I don't know what the hell they were, hotels that are just right on the beachfront.
Mm-hmm.
So just walking around and seeing all these huge skyscrapers. Location is ridiculous. It is beyond absurd. It really is. I thought it would be, everybody calls it the Vegas of the Middle East without the alcohol and the hookers.
And the gambling.
And all that. And the gambling.
So what then?
just the idea of this extravagance, right? Uh-huh. Which is true, except I noticed that, like, I've been to Vegas a few times, unfortunately, one of my least favorite locations on earth.
Mm-hmm.
It's very condensed in one area for Vegas. Dubai is fucking enormous. I couldn't believe how big it was. Mm-hmm. Like, to get to the mall is a 20-minute drive. The traffic was also terrible. But I'd love to go back to see the mall. The weather was very good, slightly humid for me, but that's because I'm used to being dry.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I thought the tournament was fun, and the hotels there are just, so this is one thing I'll say, okay. I'm not going to say where they get the money cause I have no idea, but there is no way. Like, I've definitely never seen a tournament that has cost this much to run. I did the math on, how much just hotel rooms would be. Mm-hmm. Okay. For the players, for the talent. And it's in the millions just for hotel. Think about that for a second. I don't know if a tournament has ever been held that has been this expensive. There might not be a more expensive location on Earth to host a tournament. Like,
well, TI has definitely been more expensive, but let's take that one out of the equation, right?
What do you mean? How so?
Duration, amount of teams, all the stuff around it, production. The production for TI is extremely expensive.
No, I'm not talking about production then. Yeah. So I'm just talking about logistics.
Okay.
There's no way any tournament beats this one. There's zero chance.
Maybe. I remember the first Epicenter in Moscow was in a really extravagant hotel as well. And that had an arena and a live audience, which I'm assuming was also, I don't know. How many teams did we have back then? Maybe it's comparable. I don't fucking know. It's hard to say.
Either way, it's crazy.
But yeah, I'll quickly chime in on your whole Vegas thing. I don't know if we've talked about this on the podcast before. Vegas, to me, I've been there once. I was there for a Dota tournament of all things.
Really?
Yeah. Which tournament? I forgot what it was called.
Was it the ESL or the EG one?
It was called something with ES something, I think. Hang on. Las Vegas Dota 2 Tour. I'm going to just look it up here. I think it was 2018.
I remember. Yes,
here it is. It was called World Showdown of Esports, WSOE. And I was there with Happy Guys. We got third out Happy of eight. Guys.
Was Yapzor on that team?
No, it was me, Illidan, Boogie, Aframush. And then we had Tamado as a stand-in. And he played very well that tournament. So the thing I remember about this place is that it is the most non-place I've ever been. It's like there are so many people and so many buildings and nobody lives here. It's like very, it's like eerie because everything is a facade. So you feel like you are somewhere that isn't real and everything is designed to be that illusion. You know what I mean? So when you said that about Dubai, I just thought that was kind of interesting because, you know, a lot of people live there, right? It's not like it's not a fake city in the same way as Las Vegas is. And I know people also live in Las Vegas, but like comparatively, it's like a 90% tourist or whatever you want to call it. I'm just pulling these numbers out of my ass, but you know what I mean?
Did you like Vegas?
Not in particular.
You like poker and stuff, right?
That's I didn't go to play there. I wasn't nearly as much into it as I am now, for example. And we were playing Dota, right? We were spending our time on that. I just remember. What's that?
What year was this?
2018.
So you went to Vegas in 2018. You didn't come visit me.
That's true.
How does that happen? When did we start our podcast? I guess it was later.
Later. Yeah. Way
it's
later.
It's literally an hour drive from me. Wait, that's not right. I don't know. I don't remember how long far it is. It's not that far, though. 5 hour drive.
I don't think it would have crossed my mind back then. I don't even know if there was. I don't even know if I was casting during this phase. Whatever. I genuinely don't remember. I must have been because I was casting TI that year.
As always.
Yeah, as usual. What was I gonna say? Yeah. So we were. The memories I have of this was. The hotel we were in, you just walk into a casino, you know? It's just a part of the hotel. It's literally walking through slot machines to get to the lobby. I remember we went out for a really nice dinner after the tournament was over. We went to Gordon Ramsay's steakhouse. That was really good. And then I just remember walking the little distance we had from the hotel to the venue where we were playing and walking through that. And just when you walk there in the evening, everything was just fucking... huge LED displays, cars everywhere with just, you know, there's just everything was just lights. It was just lights and screens, and the people there felt like they were going somewhere. You know, everybody was going somewhere. It's just a very weird sensation. But when you said that Dubai is like that of the Middle East, you didn't mean it in that way, right? It's more like just the aesthetic of like huge, extravagant aura. Also,
people described it to me, and I'm saying I did not find it to be that way.
I see.
It's a different kind. I mean, you can make some comparisons with how extravagant it is, but yeah. And it is fake, right? Like the beaches are completely man-made and all that, but it doesn't feel the same as Vegas to me at all.
Okay.
Vegas feels cheap. Even though it looks crazy, it feels very cheap to me. Whereas Dubai felt like a resort.
Right. Okay, let's move on. We're going to talk Dream League. So like you already said, we're going there. The tournament starts on, I believe, Sunday, if I'm not mistaken. It starts on Sunday or Monday this week. So very soon. Yeah, I see here group stage. Yeah, it starts on Sunday. That's correct. Okay, and we're going to be there for a little over 2 weeks, I think. Basically 2 weeks. The tournament concludes on March 10th. So it's a two-week tournament. We will be recording an episode or two while there, surely. Maybe we can get a guest.
We are getting a guest. Let's announce it.
Oh, yeah.
Why not? He begged us now several times. He saw the Shane episode. He's like, all right, it's time. This is the last time I'm going to ask. Pyrian Flack will be our guest. We'll make it work.
Yep. So we'll have an episode with Pyrian and maybe a second one while we're there. Let's do predictions. So this is also a really stacked tournament with international participation. So there's all the regions are represented here, I believe. Group A will be Azure Ray, BetBoom, G2IG, Game and Gladiators, Heroic, which is an SA team now. If you are into CS, this is not a Danish team. OG, Falcons, and Virtus Pro. And group B is One Win, which I will just clarify that is an Eastern European team with mostly not so known players for the Western scene. Maybe Sweden Strong is the most familiar name because he played on Navi for a short while. Aurora, Shopify Rebellion, Liquid, Secret, Spirit, Tundra, and Extreme. What a fucking lineup. Let's do a top three prediction.
Top three of groups or top three of tournament?
Of tournament. Do you want to do in order or just any top three?
We can do, yeah, any top three probably.
Okay.
All right, well, I'll be a loser and say Falcons.
So any order, yeah?
Yeah, any order.
Okay.
Ooh. So we don't know who, I guess we can, yeah, we can just put it as part of this. Yoragi is out of OG now.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know who is going to be playing for them.
The rumors are Watson is what I've heard is a potential pickup.
And I heard that, well, on a Reddit post. I don't know if it's reliable, but that 23 Savage has been bought out by an org.
23 Savage is also a rumor. Yeah, both of those are rumors. So.
Group B looks weak, really weak.
Well, it has Spirit and Liquid in it, and Extreme. Yeah.
There's some good teams, but like compared to Group A, I don't know. All right, BetBoom, Bucket. Okay. Means they're going to get last place.
And they just need to get top three. They did that this time as well. So.
All right, I'm not going to go with Liquid for once. I'm not going to go for Spirit either.
Okay.
I'll say Extreme will get their shit together after an embarrassing drop out of that last tournament.
Okay. So Falcons, BetBoom, Extreme for you. I will say Azure Ray.
Of course. Why don't you put two Chinese teams?
I'll put Azure Ray, Spirit, and... Liquid. I am not putting Falcons in top three.
Okay.
My main reason for this is with Tundra as well in the past, I feel like the team, you would probably agree with this, was a little bit like hot and cold. They had amazing tournaments and then they had mediocre tournaments, but they rarely went on like a tear where there were like months or weeks streak where they did very well. So I think there's a decent chance other teams catch up or figure them out a little bit for this event. But I'm not going to be surprised if they do great again. And I don't think they're going to bomb out. I think they're going to get top six probably, but I think the other teams also will.
Depends on if there's a patch.
Yeah, that's true as well. But that patch has to drop pretty fucking soon if they want it before the tournament. But I guess I mean,
feel like the team, an AUI team will be able to take advantage of a new patch better than the average team, probably. So I have faith.
I want to say yes and no. because I think, like we talked about, he's really good at the nerdy stuff, but I think perhaps getting all of those very little details figured out might take a little bit longer than, you know, the overarching, oh, this hero combination or this way of playing will be really good right now and kind of just winging it.
Yeah, it's a bit of hit or miss, actually, because typically after a patch, he'll look at it and he'll be convinced of something and they're going to try it, and it could be amazing, it could be terrible.
I think he gets really, really good at figuring out the absolute, like, how to squeeze the last 5% out of something when you find out the first 95 first. And a lot of the times with a new patch, it's not really about the little interactions, it's about the macro shit. Like, okay, these 10 heroes are just overpowered, or this mechanic is too strong, like whether it's healing, regen, whatever. You know, this kind of thing. So that's just my hunch. But anyway, who knows if we're even getting a patch. So, okay, that's our predictions for Dream League. I have them written down, Shannon. We will remember.
Very good. Good job.
As you already alluded to, Yuragi is put on the inactive roster for OG, so he hasn't officially kicked. I think maybe he is looking for another team. Maybe they're trying to sell him. Maybe this is on some sort of a break. But the writing on the wall here, at least, is that OG will be getting another carry, at least for the foreseeable future. I really like the guy, so I wish him all the best. And it sounds like, especially Bonkers, I saw a tweet from him. I think he really likes the guy as well. I think they had a very good relationship within the team, Bonkers being the manager of the team on site. So I think he, in particular, would have probably really liked things to work out, but sometimes they just don't. And this, I don't know the inner workings of this team, but I would like to think this isn't a personal thing whatsoever or a dynamic with between the players, but just that the play styles are the, how to say, I think it's in the game that the problem is, not outside of the game. That would be my guess, based on the bit I know about Yuragi. He seems like a good dude. So yeah, good luck to OG with whatever they do, and good luck to Yuragi. And then finally, our last topic of the day, which I don't know why this one is last, because it's kind of the juiciest one. This is a bit old news at this point, because this happened like 13 days ago, but we haven't had an episode for a while. Overplus got banned. To give a little context, if you guys don't know what this is, it's essentially a tool that you could buy, which is a third-party software that people could buy to run together with Dota. And what it would do was it would give you information that is otherwise unobtainable. So it was effectively mining stuff out of the game that the average player couldn't have access to, such as players' recent win rates, what heroes they played, which players are going to be in the opposing team while you're loading, kind of information that's just not, that's just hidden. And you could not protect yourself from this even by having a private profile, because even though your stuff isn't on Dota Buff or whatever from pubs, people could still find it with this tool. So it was, there was a discussion about whether this was a cheat or not. As far as I'm concerned, this is not a gray area. It's just flat out a cheat. And Valve seemingly have the same perspective, but they didn't make any official announcement about it. They just, out of the blue, kind of made like a honeypot, I would like to think, if you remember with the cheating scandal, or not scandal, the cheating ban wave they did.
And then, don't they? They really enjoy it.
Yeah, they do this strategy where they, this is supposedly the way you combat cheaters in games, by the way, is that you give away as little as possible. So when you do catch them, you ban them in waves, and you don't make it obvious how you found out, so that they have a harder time counter-strategizing you with your cheat. So effectively, from one day to the next, tens of thousands of players and accounts just got VAC banned out of nowhere. And people were going through their game history to check how many people got VAC banned. And there was this post from an Immortal player on the subreddit who went over his game history from like his last 50 games or something. I think all games apart from one had an overplus user, minimum one. All games.
Wow.
So that means effectively his last 50 games, there was a banned player in every fucking game.
There's no like, retroactive like MMR given or anything, right?
I don't think so. No, I think that's too complicated. I mean, you could void all the games. You could be like, every game that had an overplus user in it on either team just gets voided. That is a possible solution, I suppose. I don't know if that was just deemed not worth it or...
The VAC bans were, remind me, how long was the duration? Like 10 years?
Whatever the maximum VAC ban is, I think. I think it's like 10 years, yeah.
Is that the maximum? I feel like maximum would be permanent, like the, 100
the, years. The thing about vac bans is when you're vac banned, you can't trade, right? So effectively, every account that used Overplus had its inventory frozen. So you're not only losing your access to play Dota, you lose your inventory. And that means there's some serious monetary hits here on some of the accounts, because some people were using this on accounts that might have had hundreds or thousands of dollars worth of items, and Valve just essentially just confiscated them, right, by doing this. So, yeah, this was massively celebrated on the subreddit. There was some debate, as usual with this, where some people are claiming this isn't a cheat, you know, just play more heroes. Some people were saying a way of combating Overplus is to just make the information that Overplus gathers available to everyone in the game, which is a bit similar to something that some poker sites allow and some don't, which is called a HUD, where you can keep track of how people play during your game. So effectively, you could see, okay, this player puts money into this many pots. This is when they do it. This is where they do it. So essentially, it's the same for everyone in that sense, whereas some sites and poker will just ban that and say, we don't want that in our client. This is a similar discussion here where it's like, okay, are you going to just give this information to everyone so it's a level playing field, but you kind of feel like the rules are kind of dumb to begin with? Or do you disallow them and then some people will try to take advantage of it, right? I personally am a big fan of Valve's stance on this. I don't think this should be in the game. I think the hidden aspect of drafting and the hidden aspect of strategy is a part of the game. And especially, it shouldn't be available to some people but not others. So in my order of preference, what Valve did is the best, and the second best is to give it to everyone, but I really would not like that. So
yeah, there was a post today, supposedly they found a way around it, which I don't know if that's true. I don't even know how to verify that. But you would assume that eventually they'd get banned again. So I don't know. Also should mention that this should not be confused. This is Overplus and not Overwolf. Two completely different programs.
And Dota Plus.
As far as I know, Overwolf is not a cheat. Mm-hmm. I think I used it like 5 years ago or something, just briefly, just to see what it was like. But as far as I know, it just scrapes stuff that you can get on Dota Buff. So it's not like it just makes it slightly more convenient. But yeah, according to the dev, nobody's been banned for using that one. So
yeah. And one more thing on this topic is supposedly the Overplus devs are very adamant that, like you said, they're going to find a way to combat this and they're going to find a way around it. So they're kind of doubling down and they're playing the victim card that Valve are going to war with them or something when you guys are the ones that made a cheat. So I don't know what the fuck that angle is, but whatever you can do to justify it, I guess. The community, the main response I've seen is people are laughing at it and being like, good luck, guys, you're going up against Valve. But I think people should understand that this kind of battle between cheat and anti-cheat goes on forever, and Valve are not default winners here by being a big corporation, because at the end of the day, they need to distribute resources to it, they need to solve it, and they always need to. It's like the dynamic goes like this: anti-cheat gets updated, it fucks up the cheaters, figure out what the anti-cheat did to detect them, they try to bypass it, they get a leg up, then the anti-cheat needs to find a way to beat them again. And it's like this wave that just keeps on going forever. So the people that are laughing this off and just saying, good luck, you don't stand a chance against Valve, I think that's a naive perspective. And I think you need to be vigilant as a game dev always in a competitive game that cheating is a thing you're combating for the lifetime of the game. I don't think you ever solve it. So
I have a question. I already know what your answer is going to be, but it's an important question to ask. So as far as I know, this Overplus, one of the features is to, I don't know exactly how it works. I went on their site briefly before the podcast, but it gives you skins that you can, like, does it change the files on your computer to be skins that you don't own? Something like that? That's my understanding.
Yeah, I think effectively you can give yourself any item in the game, but it's only for you. The other people on the server side can't see it.
Right. So do you think that that had any bearing into Valve banning them? Like, if that didn't exist, do you think they still would have gotten banned?
I think they still would have gotten banned, but I don't know if it gave them... That's a good question, like, whether that made them focus on it more than they would otherwise.
Right.
I don't know the track record of similar mods, because there's been other mods that had skin changing, right? And I don't know if they've been struck down on the same in the same way. I would like to think that if you did a skin changer mod only, that Valve wouldn't vac ban you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they would do that for it. Maybe.
I remember Envy used to stream with some of those.
Yeah.
And he's not vac banned as far as I know. So, yeah, that's probably a good comparison.
But I can't say for sure. Like, obviously, if people have skin changing mods and therefore don't buy skins, it's costing Valve money, right? If you want to be really pragmatic about it. So I definitely think it's in Valve's interest to not have skin mods, but I don't think specifically that this was targeted because of that, because that was one functionality it has. But the really destructive feature is that it makes people's game quality worse, right? So.
Yep, good stuff. Valve has been very vigilant this last year and a half or so at enticing these cheaters in, banning them swiftly, and then feasting off the tears of their posts on Reddit. So yeah. Glad to see a very... what would be the description? What would be a good way to describe somebody that does that? Your English is better than mine, of course.
I don't even know what you're going for.
It's almost like one of these... There's got to be a good word for it. It's not a villain, but it's somebody that really enjoys getting justice in this fashion, but they... And they're not merciful, you know? Anyway.
There is a really good word. Now it's bothering me too. Wonderful. Oh, it's in chat. Scientologist. There it is. Yes. So far the suggestions are Holy Based, Trapdoor Spider, Scientologist, and Sadist. Vigilante. Yeah, Vigilante is probably the best one so far.
I guess. Well, let's go with Scientologist. Really tickled me.
Valve are really showing their Scientologist side with this ban wave. Very good. Thanks for that, Donut. That's a great... My vocabulary gets tested on the daily. It's good we have you for some help.
Very good. Appreciate that.
Okay.
All right. That's the end, eh? You can bid us adieu, actually. Nice change of pace.
That's right. Thanks, everybody, for watching. That was episode 225. Suns Fan and Cinnerin signing out. Suns Fan, that's me. And Cinnerin, that's you. Signing out. Bye-bye.
We say things that don't mean anything.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Thanks for listening.